Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio.
Welcome to the brightest audience in the country. I'm Fred Williams, host of Real Science Radio. This is part two of our show rebutting the Smithsonian Institute's Hall of Human Origins Ape-Man articles. So joining me again is Brody Leach, who's written some great rebuttal articles to the Smithsonian. Brody, it's great to have you back.
Thank you so much for having me back.
So Brody, when you contacted us, you had mentioned that you had a coworker that you kind of had an interaction with regarding creation versus evolution. I think you said she was an agnostic.
Yeah, I've had several conversations with coworkers, one in particular, which I had mentioned, and you guys have really helped me in that area. She had asked, she says, if there was a global flood, shouldn't there be a lot of evidence for it? And so I all but copy and pasted the Real Science Radio list of evidence for the global flood. And when I did, I didn't even get a response to that one. And I think she was pretty much sold after just that single page because there was so much evidence on there. It's kind of overwhelming when you first see it. And it's just so obvious that she wanted to talk about anything but that after I gave that bit of information.
It's like, first of all, thanks for tossing that softball to me.
Yeah, exactly. Except that's what it felt like. It was such an easy softball. I was like, whoa. But I was so thankful.
And you know, you can go to rsar.org/flood. And sure enough, you'll find our page that goes through all the evidence. There's a ton of evidence for a global flood. I mean, it's overwhelming. It's funny how so many people don't know that because they're told, oh, there's no evidence for a global flood. And then that's all they ever hear. But when you look into it, it's amazing what you discover. I mean, I think back to when I first got into creation evolution, a coworker, he said, oh, there's overwhelming evidence for evolution. And at the time, I didn't have a huge opinion. I definitely believed in millions of years. So it spurred me to look into it. And about after 6 months, I became convinced that both evolution is false and that the Earth is not millions of years old. In fact, I was upset that I'd let myself be brainwashed, that I had been brainwashed. I was 30 years old at the time. So that's a long time thinking that God created dinosaurs as pets to have for millions and millions of years. You know, I had all kinds of goofy thoughts. I wasn't totally bought into evolution, but I definitely had bought into the millions of years. So anyways, Well, thanks for doing that. Thanks for sharing our material at Real Science Radio.
Thank you guys for having that material.
Yeah. So Brody, we got through two of these alleged ape men on the last show. That was fun going through that. We have three more to go through. In fact, there's a whole bunch. They've got a whole bunch of articles. And you've started writing rebuttals to each of them, which I think is fantastic because, you know, we noted on the last show that ICR has polling data that shows that these illustrations of these human chimp ancestors, these ape-like creatures evolving into men, you know, it's like the sequence diagram of seven or eight creatures all in with the intermediates from this ape to a man. Those illustrations they're all over the place. If you search for the word evolution, so if you're listening to the show and you're not driving, you know, I don't want you to, you know, put this in your phone while you're driving, but you can go to your computer, type in evolution, and you're going to see all kinds of pictures of this illustration of alleged ape men. And if you click the images tab on Google, that's almost all the evidence you see. They really push this whole narrative of ape men. So it's great to have you on the show to help us talk through this. It's been a little bit of time since we've actually talked about the evidence that really contradicts all these alleged ape men.
Thank you. And in regards to that animation, you know, you start with the chimp on the left and then you have the human on the right and a bunch of made up things in between. It's one of those things with that particular animation they call the March of Progress. That doesn't even do a decent job of representing their own theory. I've read about a lot of different evolutionists hate that image because the question that naturally arises and a lot of creationists ask, they're like, well, where are all the in-between things? Why is everything else dead? Why did only the one on the beginning and the end stay alive? And then, of course, at that point, they punt the problem. Oh, well, it's not a matter of chimps turning into humans. Chimps and humans both descended from some other ancestor later. It's like, well, then why are you using this image? Because if it doesn't even represent your own theory, why is it the most popular piece of evidence for your theory? But sadly, again, so many just fall for the deception and they bounce back and forth between the narratives, between, oh, well, you know, you can go back through human, ape, dog, lizard, fish, you know, whatever order they come up with. Mm-hmm. But then, because that's the order that they cherry picked out of the fossil record, so many of those things in the fossil record are still living today. So they're like, oh, well, everything comes from something, you know, different, things that we don't see like today. Well, which is it? Are you relying on the fossil record, this bogus radiometric dating? You know, is that it? Or is it what this other thing you're telling us? And they really can't reconcile it. They just switch back and forth between whichever narrative is most convenient at the moment.
Yeah. You know, in this march of progression, it's great for their propaganda branch, like at CNN, MSNBC. That's what they're going to push. And Fox News, frankly, all the major media outlets regularly push this whole evolution narrative. It clearly goes against the Bible, and that's why it's happening. It's a religious belief.
Yes, so. 100%.
Okay, well, Brody, the next one on the list is called, and I love how you provide the pronunciation in your article, and I've never tried this before. I'm going to try it on air. We're going to see how I do, and then you can grade me. So here is how you have it written out to pronounce, and this one's a tricky one. Ardipithecus cadaba.
Very good, very good. So Ardipithecus cadaba, that's correct. And, of course, means oldest ancestor in the Afar language, like the Afar region in
Okay, Ethiopia. So not Afar language. Okay.
Right. It's a language in Ethiopia. Let's stick with that. But in spite of the fact that this species is only known in the fossil record by a few postcranial bones and sets of teeth. So, of course, postcranial is like below the skull, a few teeth. It's a total of 36 bone fragments. So again, we're not looking at a bunch of complete skeletons. We're not even looking at a bunch of complete skulls. If you look at this, and I highly recommend any of our listeners, anybody listening, please check out rsr.org, go to this page, and please take a look at these fossils, because when you see how little they actually have, that alone is a very compelling case for creation.
Yeah, and so, we'll have that up, rsr.org. It'll show the last couple of shows, and we'll be posting those images.
Awesome.
And you know, by the way, Brody, we're going to go to video here sometime in the summer. And that what will be great about that, it'll be a video podcast. It'll still also air as audio over the radio, but we'll be able to show these images. And that's one of the advantages. You know, video seems to be the wave of the future. I've told the production team many times that I've got the perfect face for radio. So, you know, maybe I'll get a mohawk haircut to draw attention to, maybe draw attention away from my face. I don't know.
If you're taking votes, I'd love to see the whole caveman thing again that you guys did.
Oh, you know, that's homepage. Funny. Yeah. Other people have mentioned that, you know, we got to do another caveman skit. So we've got a video of that somewhere. It's on the webpage. It's not just the image, but we had a whole skit that we did at Red Rocks, in fact.
Right.
Yep. So
that's awesome.
And our prior producer, Russ, I think he still helps with some of the show. He's up in Alaska. Hi, Russ. So he was there when we did that video clip. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
Anyway.
So the section of these bone fragments that I hope everybody gets a chance to see on Real Science Radio's website, they have these fragments laid out. They have some kind of categorized. But the Smithsonian claims, based on just these bone fragments, that Ardipithecus cadaba was bipedal.
Okay.
Yeah, so again, they're saying this is another one. They've got enough bone fragments, they couldn't fill a shoebox with these things, but they're sure that this thing walked upright. So the evidence for that claim is one bone from the large toe has a broad, robust appearance, suggesting its use in bipedal push-off.
one bone from the large toe. Okay.
One bone, yeah, which you'd think, again, this is like Nebraska Man. You know, they find one bone and they're like, oh, look, this is proof human evolution. They're doing it again.
Oh, yeah.
They do it
That's
over
right.
And over.
Yeah, Nebraska Man came from one tooth and they created his family, you know, Nebraska Man and his family, you know, his whole family, his wife and kids from one tooth.
And of course, you remember what that tooth belonged to.
Yeah, it was a pig.
Right. So, yeah, one extinct pig tooth and they created an ape out of it.
Yep.
It gets worse. They have one toe bone is sketchy already. But the way that the place and the dating of this thing makes it even worse. The evidence comes from that single toe bone, but by their own radiometric dating methods, which I could criticize radiometric dating all day long. Yeah. So many problems, but of course, you know that. And I'd say the Real Science Radio audience probably is well familiar with the issues of radiometric dating. but they have dated this toe bone 400,000 years younger than the other specimens. So you have a pile of bones. They have one of them that is, by their own standard, 400,000 years different from the rest of the bones. And they claim that that is evidence that this thing walked upright.
So a toe that's a lot younger. So this thing's 400,000 years it waits, and it finally gets a toe.
Right.
And it's a toe that apparently just might be something that, hey, that might be using that to push off. That's what it says. That's what the Smithsonian says. Bipedal, push off.
Yes. So. And again, they claim with certainty at the beginning of their article, well, we know that this was bipedal. And then you get down there and they're like, well, we're basing this off of a single large toe bone that's 400,000 years younger than the other specimens. And then it gets even worse for the evolutionists, that that particular bone was found 10 miles away from the other specimens. So can you imagine? I mean, 10 miles. I mean, wherever you live, drive across town, find a totally different bone that has a totally different date, even by the secular standpoint, and you go, oh yeah, let's put them together like it's the same species. And that's exactly what they've done.
It's amazing what they do to try to create their ape men.
Yeah, yeah. And then after their bold claim that this species, which again, they're naming species off of a few bone fragments, then at the end of their article, they ask, was Ardipithecus cadaba routinely bipedal? Like, did it normally walk upright? Was that its habitual form of locomotion? And which it's worth noting that even apes today, they can stand upright. It's not advantageous to them because of their anatomy. But nonetheless, it's possible every once in a while. Yep. So when evolutionists say that, oh, we have an ancient ape, that it could walk upright sometimes. Well, that's no different from what they are today. That's totally normal and fits with the creation paradigm perfectly. But then they also ask, if Ardipithecus cadaba walked upright, what was its gait like? So if it did, how did it walk? And then they ask, is it somehow related to Aurontuganensis and Sahelanthropus chinensis? Now, for those who may have forgotten from our last show, those two names are Aurontuganensis and Sahelanthropus chinensis. Both of those are claimed to be at the base of the human family tree. This particular ape is supposed to be one of the human ancestors, but yet they don't know if it's related to the other two.
Yeah, because they're asking if it's related to these other creatures that they claim is, you know, part of the evolutionary tree from apes to humans.
And again, you see at the beginning these bold claims, and at the end, they don't know if all these things are even related to each other, let alone modern humans. It's such a stretch compared to how much they actually have.
They're really stretching things here. It's almost like they know that they're snake oil salesmen. I hate to put it that way, but
right.
And you know, and they're trying to kind of in a way make up for it a little bit by asking these questions at the end of the article. I mean, who knows why they do it? But they come out, like you've said, the last show, where they're so forceful when they start the article about here's really good evidence for a human ancestor. And then they question themselves at the end of the article, for those who happen to read that far.
Yes, which I had to force myself to for the first couple. Then after I realized that that was the trend, I had an easy time reading the rest of them.
So the next one is Ardy. That's the nickname. And so this guy is pronounced Ardipithecus ramidus.
Yes.
How's that?
That is perfect.
All right, two for two. Great.
Yes, and Ardy is the nickname, which still easy to pronounce. I like the nicknames. This one was discovered in Middle Awash in Ghana, Ethiopia, between 1992 and 1994. The fragments were assembled into a partial skeleton in 2009. So 15 years after they found all these bones, they decide, let's make a skeleton.
Quite the pattern here.
Since that time, that time frame where they're discovering, like 92 to 94, paleoanthropologist Dr. Tim White and his team, they have uncovered over 100 fossil specimens of Ardipithecus ramidus. Now, it's worth keeping in mind, you know, think 100 specimens, and you'll see animations maybe on PBS or Nova or some similar program. They will show these animations where you look like you have some kind of army of ape men because they have 100 specimens. But all 100 plus specimens are fragments that don't even make up a complete skeleton.
Yeah,
like if you imagine if you had, it's like if you imagine just a handful of bones or just the bones of a hand, they might say they have 10 different specimens when even though all they have is some of the hand bones or fragments, they may not even have complete bones. I mean, if you take a femur, you break it in half and say you have two specimens, that's how they count.
So they have this whole army of these 100 specimens, you know, to give the illusion that they actually have a lot of evidence. Which is typical of what they do.
Right. So you need to keep in mind that all 100 plus specimens of this species, they're just bone fragments. They represent about 35 individual members. That's what's claimed by the Smithsonian and others. But they only have bone fragments. They do not have a full skeleton. So when they say 100 plus specimens, you get the idea of, you know, you have all these different ape men. Really, it's not. You have part of one ape man. And they just use that number because it makes it seem like they have a lot more than they do.
Yeah, even though it's from really just 35, apparently, individual members of this alleged ape man species.
Right, exactly. Which are most likely just, you know, regular chimps, bonobos, something to that extent. But the fossils were in such poor condition that Dr. Tim White, who's the leading paleontologist on the team who discovered the fossils, stated that they were like roadkill. So instead of calling this Artie, we're just going to call it roadkill for the rest of the show, if that's all right.
That works for me.
Yeah, it's because that's such a perfect nickname for it, because these were so damaged. And we'll get into this a little bit more here. So the Discovery Channel added in their documentary titled Discovering Artie that the skull was found in 34 pulverized scattered pieces that were compacted down to about 1.5 inches thick.
Wow.
This thing has been, it sounds like this thing was run over by a bulldozer.
And just remember, people, that they're going to turn this thing into a human or part human.
Right. That's regardless. Their goal. Yeah. If they find anything even remotely ape-like, they assume it's a human ancestor. But one of the allegedly human-like features is the pelvis. Now, some evolutionists claim that the pelvis shows adaptations that combine tree climbing and bipedal activity. However, as reported in their documentary, Discovering Artie, the pelvis was too badly broken and fragile to take out of the matrix it was in. So Dr. Owen Lovejoy made a reconstruction based on his knowledge of primate anatomy and a micro CT scanner.
Reconstruction. Okay.
Right.
Sounding like right, Lucy, did a deer step on this bone?
Right.
The deer caused this thing to look like roadkill.
Exactly.
That's what they did with Lucy. They said a deer stepped on it and they had to reconstruct the bone. But anyways.
Exactly. But they didn't just reconstruct this thing. They've reconstructed it 14 different times until they eventually, 14 was their lucky number. And they said, all right, this is the one we can use. Now, Drs. Wood and Harrison rightly expressed a great deal of concern about this, pointing out that a whole lot of speculation went into the final pelvis reconstruction. Dr. Younger stated, that's really kind of a 3D Rorschach test, if you ask me. I'm still not convinced it's necessarily completely accurate. The Smithsonian's still asking, does the pelvis of Artie, or roadkill as we're going to call her, support the hypothesis that this early human species was bipedal? So you can just imagine, you know, 14 different reconstructions. They finally find one that they like, and they're like, yeah, we're going with this. It's like, well, what makes you think that one's right instead of some different configuration? This thing's smashed.
Selective evidence. And plus, they create the evidence themselves. That's what's amazing about this. Now, if I'm not mistaken, isn't this the same Lovejoy who reconstructed Lucy's pelvis with a bone saw?
Yeah, yes, that is correct.
You can go to rsr.org/Lucy and watch that video. It's actually kind of humorous. Dr. David Minton gave a presentation on this, and Dr. Minton this year went with, he's with the Lord now. He was a really great man of creation, and he had some really good stuff on, you know, hominids and, you know, alleged ape men. Well, anyways, he had a video of this guy, and it was from PBS. And just go watch the video. It's amazing. He's sitting there with a bone saw, and he's actually cutting parts off the bone. Now, how does a deer step on a bone and cause it to have parts merge into it that then need to be cut off with a bone saw so that it'll fit and make her pelvis more human-like? It's amazing.
Right. It's laughable.
Bob, I swear I'm going to probably say this, if not every show, it's going to be really close. He would often say, stupid doesn't make you sin, but sin makes you stupid.
Yes,
and here's
very
just
true.
Another example of that.
Yes, that's a great quote. I love that. And it's so, so true and so applicable here, because that's the kind of stuff we're seeing. So Dr. Lovejoy, it all goes downhill after the pelvis thing. So Dr. Lovejoy believes that Artie's spine was probably long and curved like a human's rather than short and stiff like a chimp's. He based that belief on both the pelvis that was reconstructed 14 times and his guess that Artie had 6 lumbar vertebrae. Now, that's despite the fact that most apes only have 3 or 4 and humans have 5. But they don't even have any of Artie's lumbar vertebrae. Again, I would like to, any of the listeners, I would just recommend you take a look at this page. If you can look up the Real Science Radio page for this show and see that they don't have the spine of this skeleton, but it's one of their best pieces of evidence for its upright walking.
Yeah.
Is again, it's so convenient that the most important parts of these fossils are always missing.
Yeah, their best evidence always is things that are missing, you know, and like in the fossil record happened, punctuated equilibrium. It happened so fast, we have no evidence for it.
Exactly. And the only way you can refute it is by proving our other evolutionary theories right. It's a catch 22. Yeah, it's terribly frustrating. But thankfully, there are individuals that can see through it, see all the problems with that. But the displays and animations of art insert an entirely imaginary spine with a four-part curve like humans into the reconstructions. And then they insert the spine into the base of the skull in this upright position, even though most of the skull is missing. The foramen magnum, which as we've discussed, doesn't really determine the orientation of how the head is held on the body when they walk upright. But you can go to the last show
and we talked about that hole in the base of the skull. And for humans, it's in the center. And chimps, it's generally in the back, but it's actually toward the center when they're younger. It works its way to the back.
So they found
a juvenile chimp and then tried to claim, oh, look, this thing's is part human because it's in the middle. Well, no. Tons of evidence says that this is just a juvenile chimp. And you go back to our last show to hear us talk about that. That was super interesting. I'm really glad you brought that up.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Yes, but in this case, it's even worse. They don't even have all of the foramen magnum. Of this hole, you could see like chunks of where it should be forming this hole are missing. And so they're speculating that the spine inserted upright like humans. And we know even if that were true, that wouldn't mean that it was bipedal, that it walked upright. But we don't even know if that's true because it's so much speculation. We have this pelvis that was reconstructed, imaginary spine going into a missing foramen magnum for them to claim that this thing walked upright.
The dark matter of hominids.
Exactly. Yeah. But then if you look at all the ape-like features that they do have, they're so obvious. I mean, even like science.org wrote, the skull of this tiny ape can fit into the palm of your hand like a softball. And her brain was about the same size as a bonobo or a female chimp. I was like, yeah, because that's what it was.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, Artie's foot had a hallux, which, you know, a hallux is a grasping toe that hangs off to the side, which humans don't have, but apes do. And it had a hallux just like apes have today. And Dr. Tim White, again, he said that the toe really doesn't differ from apes. And that's the surprising thing. It is fully ape-like. And Dr. Youngers added, I see nothing in the foot that suggests bipedality.
Yeah. So again, these are evolutionists. These aren't creationists from ICR, Creation Ministries International. These guys are
evolutionists and experts in their field that are criticizing this, saying it doesn't really look like there's any bipedality here.
Yep.
Genesis Apologetics, which is a great creation ministry, they states, when you put her, that's Artie, next to a bonobo, it sure seems like she fits into the ape family quite well.
Yeah, just like Lucy, right? I mean, Lucy, if you compare her skull to a bonobo, they're identical. That's all Lucy is. That's all Artie is. You know, Artie and Lucy are related. You know, they're probably both, you know, some type of bonobo. Maybe a variety of a bonobo. You know, maybe they're cousins. They might have the same mama.
Exactly. And they might, and you know, as I mentioned in the last show, is that the evolutionists, when comparing these things, they tend to take a norm or an average of what your average human body skeleton would look like, or what the ape skeleton would look like. And then any variation from this average is going to be some sort of evolutionary change, even though we have as much variety now as they do in a lot of these fossil finds. And so it's just not that different. But these are so obviously, you know, apes that, you know, I showed a picture of one of these to one of my five-year-old nephews. And when he looked at it, I said, what do you think this is? He goes, that's a monkey. And just right off. I mean, he, at the age of five, you could tell exactly what this is. And so anyways.
It's just like when you show them like a rock formation and you ask him, was this caused by wind and erosion? And if, you know, if they kind of understand those concepts, a five-year-old is going to say yes. And if you show them Mount Rushmore,
right,
you know, they're going to immediately know that that's design. It's so apparent.
Yeah. There's no accident. And we can easily tell. And, you know, you guys have covered this. So many of the quotes from the evolutionists, you know, even Richard Dawkins says that biology looks like it's designed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Francis Crick offered that warning, you know, that he's like, we have to keep in mind that what we're working with is evolved, not designed. And it's like, why do you have to remember that? Maybe it's the truth. Maybe it is designed. Maybe that's why it looks the way it is. Maybe you can just trust your own two eyes in front of you.
Yep.
So, but anyway, so
yeah, we hope, you know, people can that hear this, we, you know, our listening audience is already going to know, but you know, we got to reach people and have them educate them on this stuff because they're being lied to. The Smithsonian is blatantly doing this. And if you go to the bonobo conservation site, bonobo.org, right away, they claim that bonobos share 99% DNA with humans. In our last show, we, you know, easily refuted that. That's just, it's not true. It's a big lie. People, they see these claims and they believe it because they don't know any different. A lot of people don't. It's amazing, you know, how many people buy into this stuff. So we're almost out of time, Brody, but I want to get through this last one. I'm going to take a shot at it again. So far, I'm 2 for 2. Australopithecus, which, you know, I know that word. Okay, here we go. You've got the pronunciation. Anamensis. How about that?
Yes.
Anamensis. Perfect. Is that it? Great.
Yes, that is it. And all right. That's a set of fossil fragments discovered between 1965 and 2019. What? It's a 54-year span.
Wow. 5 decades. Okay.
Yeah. 5 decades, which, you know, they've actually, you know, they kind of exceeded Piltdown Man. So they broke their own record. Good for them. Fossils of this species have been found in the middle Awash region in northeast Ethiopia at 3 sites. That's Elia Bay, Kanapoi, and Sibolo, around Lake Turkana in Kenya. So generally, these are found around Lake Turkana. These areas in which the fossils were discovered are almost 600 miles apart. So if you like the middle Awash region in Ethiopia is 600 miles away from the areas around Lake Turkana where they find the rest of these. So again, you imagine 600 miles, that's quite a bit of distance. Yep. But they find these in these locations, they just stick them together. And if you look at this, again, most of the fragments undoubtedly came from apes. The Smithsonian's article lists multiple obvious ape-like features. Long forearms, features of the wrist bones, suggests that they probably climb trees. They have a protruding face, long narrow brain case, forwardly projecting cheekbones, similar to Paranthropus, which hopefully we get to do a show on Paranthropus later. But they have thickly built, long, narrow, strong jaws, heavily enameled teeth, and the sites where their remains have been found were forests and woodlands that grew around lakes. So even their habitat, everything about these bones that they belong to apes. Yeah. And the Australian Museum adds that the size was probably similar to that of modern chimpanzees, and the journal Nature reported that Anamensis had specialized wrist morphology associated with knuckle walking.
So everything is... This thing is just an extinct ape or maybe a modern species of ape. You know, they found an ape and they like to turn these things into humans.
Yes, exactly. And there are two particular bones that they say have a more human-like nature. That's the tibia and the humerus, which again, we have parts of both of those.
Mm-hmm.
And the Smithsonian says that the top part of the tibia is concave or depressed from stress, which... We mentioned this in the last show too. That may just be that this ape was older instead of that it was evolving. If it's just had more pressure, that could just be a longer amount of time. But the Smithsonian would say that this shows that the individual often put weight on the bone and that's evidence for it standing upright. There's multiple steps of speculation until it's just becomes wild speculation. But then they'll say the lower part of the tibia is wider, or thicker. That's evidence that it acted as a type of shock absorber as this individual walked.
Wow.
And so again, a lot of steps of speculation for so few bones, but the Australian Museum says likewise. They say the knee end of the tibia was human-like. The upper surfaces of the two knobs at the top of the tibia were similar in size and concave in shape. This feature indicates the species could walk bipedally. And Scientific American adds, the Anamensis humerus lacks a deep oval hollow used as a locking mechanism between the humerus and ulna, the latter being present in chimpanzees, but not in humans. And the Anamensis tibia is wide as in humans because of extra spongy tissue, which acts as shock absorbers during bipedal locomotion.
And these are all based on 3 bone fragments, right?
Yeah, they have a few more from this species, but all these claims about bipedal locomotion are only from 1 fragment of the tibia.
Okay. Huh.
Yeah. So there's again, a lot of speculation off that one because everything else looks ape-like. They have to go with that one because it's the only thing that shows any variation from the norm. But these strong claims, considering, you know, they're based on such little evidence. But in a 1995 article in the journal Nature, Peter Andrews, a paleontologist, suggested that the tibia and humerus coming from different sections of the Canopoi locality strata than the primitive, that's in quotes, jaws and teeth, which came from lower level, might possibly be related to humans and the other to apes. So again, these aren't even found in the same fossil strata.
Yeah.
Why they're thinking they came from the same species is just because it's convenient for the narrative. They have such different locations, different features of where, like they were totally different species living at different times, different places, but yet they stick them together like they're one fossil. You know, when evolutionists combine human and ape bones to make an ape man, if they do that again, it's not the first time, probably won't be the last. So, but the timeline problem is that, you know, for instance, Dr. Johann Haile Selassie, which I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, but he announced that a nearly complete Anamensis cranium dated to 3.8 million years ago, which according to the Darwinist timeline indicates the species overlapped with Australopithecus afarensis for at least 100,000 years. Well, if it overlapped for 100,000 years, that's not an ancestor.
Exactly.
You gotta have some time in between for it to be an ancestor.
That happens so often. You know, their own dating mechanisms, which we know are flawed, they'll contradict their very claims. You know, same thing happened with, you know, a lot of the whale fossils. They'll find a supposed thing that it evolved into before that creature actually existed.
Exactly.
Like Tiktaalik is a classic example. A lot of people don't know that, and they'll keep pushing that as a transitional fossil. And here is yet more examples. It's amazing how, you know,
the lengths they go to are absurd. And, you know, you mentioned Tiktaalik, but, you know, they found footprints that are dated, you know, 300,000 years before Tiktaalik. But Tiktaalik was supposed to be the first thing that evolved legs. Well, that's the first thing, legs and feet. And then you've got, again, 300,000 year gap. But I imagine if that's not on the list of discoveries squeezing evolution, may want to add that on.
Pretty sure that's on there. That's almost a certainty.
That's also a great show. Evolution's a big squeeze. So to all listeners, please check that one out as well.
Yeah.
But then the Smithsonian asks, they say, is Australopithecus anamensis a separate species from Australopithecus afarensis? With the Australian Museum adding that the debate about the validity of the species designation continues. So again, whether or not it's even a species is still in question.
And yet they're pushing this thing on their, you know, on their website in the Hall of Human Origins.
So, exactly.
Wow. Well, Brody, we're actually out of time. I'm hoping that I can I put these articles on the website?
Absolutely.
That way people can actually go through and look at, you know, all of this evidence that you present, you know, your rebuttal evidence. It's very powerful. There's no way these things are, you know, transitioning from an ape to a human. It's just wild imagination run amok.
Right.
You know, one point I wanted to bring up too, if you think about the fossil record, it's mostly invertebrates. If you look at it, so here's kind of like an evolutionist shell game, the sleight of hand they're doing. Whenever they present their line of evidence for the fossil record, you know, to try to prove evolution, without fail, every single time they'll present a vertebrate transitional fossil like we're talking about here. And so why is this important? The evolutionist is failing to mention to the audience that vertebrates actually constitute less than 0.01% of the entire fossil record. Not 1%, 0.01%. And then if you look at that small sliver in the fossil record, most of those species are represented by a bone or less. Like we've talked about, a lot of these are just fragments. And so what about the other 99.99% of the fossil record? Well, that's the other evidence that the evolutionist is withholding from you. Complex invertebrates, that's what we're talking about. That's what makes up so many of the fossils. You can find a complex invertebrate in the gravel at Home Depot. They make up a vast majority of the fossil record. And we've cataloged literally millions of different species of these very complex creatures. And in fact, we often have entire fossils, not like these ape men that we're talking about, where you have fragments here and there, and then you need a bone saw to make them fit your narrative. It's a rich and virtually complete portion of the fossil record, and yet there's not a single sign of evolution whatsoever. So it's a huge illusion. It's a huge sleight of hand by the evolutionist by appealing to these fragments of bones that they turn into whatever their whatever they want to push in their narrative. It's like, you know, the Pachycetus. If you go look at, I have a college textbook, and it's evolutionary biology, and it mentions the fossil record for Pachycetus. It's in the direct quote, known from a skull. And even that's misleading because it's not even a full skull. It's like 20% of the skull. And so they come up with a whale with a blowhole and everything from a skull.
Yeah, the wild extrapolations are embarrassing. It's there's just so much wild imagination that goes into these things.
Yep.
And, you know, as you mentioned with the whole fossil record, you know, the fossil record has always been a problem for evolution. Somehow it gets, you know, associated like it's their best evidence is from a fossil record. Well, if that's their best evidence, and it maybe it is their best evidence, it's not very good. There's not a great evidence. But you know, you mentioned previously, Stephen Jay Gould says the trade secret of paleontology is that we don't find transition of the fossil record, but stasis.
Exactly.
It's not just one or two things missing, but the entire timeline is completely opposite of what they would expect. And, you know, I had another coworker recently say that he thought from a secular point of view, it's absurd to think that, you know, dinosaurs and man live together. But I'm like, there's a bunch of fossils of creatures that are living today that are found in lower strata than the dinosaurs.
Yep.
So, and it's like, so why is that so hard to reconcile? And it's because, you know, the textbooks say, well, dinosaurs have been gone for 80 million years. Well, if you're going to argue that something lived 80 million years ago can't live with something today, then you just overmind your own theory, because you have all these different species. You know, they find opossums that are in the same strata as dinosaurs. You know, the coelacanth fish was, you know, said to be extinct for 80 million years until they were found, right off the coast of Madagascar. Scientists pull up to the market and they find these guys selling them. They're like, where'd you get these things? They're supposed to be 80 million years dead. You know, and not only are these things still back there and still living today, which squeezes the timeline, but then so many of these fossils have soft tissue in them, and there's no major changes to the anatomy from back then to today.
Yeah.
You just don't see the change. Like, everything you should expect to find on an evolutionary timeline is simply not there.
Yeah. And the greatest paleontological find of the last century is what you just mentioned, this soft tissue, dinosaur soft tissue, even DNA. I mean, that itself is just overwhelmingly refutes the idea that dinosaurs are millions of years old. But even before we had that evidence, we already had tons of evidence of humans and dinosaurs living together. I mean, tell the Chinese that they've got a mythical creature on their calendar. That's you know, they have a dragon on their calendar, and all a dragon is just a dinosaur of the past. You know, you don't find the word dinosaur in the Bible because that word wasn't invented until like the 1800s. But it's clearly a description. My wife and I know we got to probably wrap this up. I think we're over time. But I wanted to mention, when my wife and I went to China, I was on a business trip. We went to the museum. And on a lot of their furniture and a lot of items, they've got dinosaurs. So imagine in our culture today, in any culture, whether it be Chinese or American or whatever, do you think a grown person is going to have Buzz Lightyear on their bed forever? I mean, they'll be looked at as an idiot, you know, but if you have something real, like an elephant or some, or maybe a lion is part of your, you know, like if you had like lions on your bed frame, on the poles, or, you know, on your headboard, that's not so weird because that's an actual vicious, manly creature. Right. But if you had Buzz Lightyear or Batman or anything fictional, that's, you know, people are going to look at you like you're an idiot, frankly, you know, especially if you're a grown adult, not if you're a child, where this was furniture for grown adults. This wasn't like some kid's bed, and they had dinosaur engravings on a lot of this stuff. There's no way that men and dinosaurs did not live together. The evidence is overwhelming that they did. And, you know, as I said, even the Bible mentions dinosaurs in several different places. So anyways, Brody, I mean, we could go on forever, couldn't we? I mean, this is shooting apples in a barrel. This stuff's real easy. There's so much evidence for creation. And, you know, we desperately need to get it out there. We actually have a couple of conferences coming up in Denver that I'd like to mention. So the Denver Society of Creation is sponsoring an event from ICR, and that should be really good. There's going to be three speakers out for that event, and you can go to denversocietyofcreation.com or just Google their website. And then also for the youth out there, and I think we're targeting anywhere from middle school all the way up to like 29 years old, we're going to host a youth conference in early May, and you can go to ffycdenver.com to register for that. And Carl Kirby will be the speaker, and this guy's fantastic. He's world-renowned, really. It's a real joy that we have him coming to give that talk. So we'll be promoting those as they get closer, but please get those on your calendar. Both of those are going to be really good conferences. If you go to youngearth.org, we do advertise for both of those there, so that'll be a good place to go check that out. So, Brody, it was great going through these. I know that we're going to have you back again, and you know, we'll update the audience on further articles that you're putting together. And then also, Perry Little, who's co-hosted with me a few times and definitely will be doing so here in the future, his son Calvin's going to be in Washington, D.C. on a high school field trip, and we're hoping he makes his way into the Smithsonian Museum of Natural History and, you know, take a few pictures and do a little bit of RSR research for us if he's able to. Now, those field trips, you know, they're really on the go. It's a really quick agenda. They're moving through things quickly, but we're hoping if Calvin can come up with some stuff that we can use on the show, that'd be great. So anyways, Brody, again, what a pleasure to have you on the air, and thanks for the work that you're doing to, you know, expose the myth behind this these alleged ape men.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure and an honor being on here.
Okay, so for Brody Leach, I'm Fred Williams of Real Science Radio. May God bless you.
Intelligent design and DNA. Scholars can't explain it all away. Get ready to be awed by the handiwork of God. Tune in to Real Science Radio. Turn up the Real Science Radio. Keeping it real. That's what I'm talking about.